It's a great time of year if you like to go to the movies. There's no holiday shopping to do, no garden to tend, no snow to shovel, at least this year. And you're not really missing the nice weather. But when it comes to picking what films to see, that's where the movie critics come in. This is The Walt Bodine Show. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross, filling in today for Russ Simmons. Today we're reviewing films released in Kansas City over the past 3 weeks. And in the second half of the hour, we'll ask you to call in and share your own reviews. We're joined today by our regular movie critics, Loey Lockerbie of the Kansas City Star.
Good morning.
And Eric Moline of Lawrence.com and Steensealers.com.
Hi.
And Tom Pope, professor of film at UMKC.
Good morning.
Good morning. So we're going to start off this morning with Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, which opened January 6th. Eric?
Yeah, Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy is a movie based on the most famous novel from John le Carré, who audiences might know. He's a writer of spy and thriller novels, and this is actually the second adaptation. Originally, in the early 70s, there was a very critically acclaimed BBC series starring Alec Guinness. I believe it was 5 parts in America and 6 in Britain. That adapted this labyrinthine story of Cold War era stuff going on between MI6, British intelligence, and Russia. And basically what this is if you've seen the trailer, and it's the same tagline in every single trailer I've seen because it's the only way to describe it, there's a mole at the top of the British intelligence. And basically, this movie, it's shot by Tomas Alfredson, who's this really great director who did this movie, Let the Right One In, a couple years back, that kind of turned the whole vampire movie on its ear. But he's a really formalistic director who paints these beautiful pictures with it's almost like every frame of the film is a still an amazing still shot. And Gary Oldman plays the Alec Guinness role of Smiley, the guy who is charged with finding out who the mole is. And the movie unfolds at a snail's pace, and it looks amazing. And it's basically a bunch of conversations between a bunch of old British guys talking to each other about people that we don't see on screen until later in the movie when it's some sort of flashback. And if you didn't remember their name, you're really in trouble because this is the hardest time I've had in recent memory, and I see a lot of movies, in following a plot. And for people to say that it's a thriller is being kind. Because
sounds a little maddening.
It is. It's really maddening. And I have to say, I love this guy's movies, Alfredson's films. I wanted to like this movie a lot. And I really responded to the visuals, the things that the way that he told the story visually. Especially in terms of a couple scenes that actually were suspenseful. There was an assassination and a guy trying to sneak a file out of MI6. But other than that, this movie just lies on the screen and it really is a frustrating film. And I think that as a thriller, it doesn't work. I just think that the plot, that he doesn't lay out the stakes enough. And that it's impossible to follow unless you've either read the book, watched the miniseries, or, like a lot of reviews that I've read, have gone on Wikipedia to find out what happened after you've seen the film. And I like to go into movies knowing nothing about them. I don't, you know, unless I've already read the book, I don't do research. I think the movie should stand on its own. This one, absolute failure in that capacity.
And your stars that you'd give it?
Out of how many?
Out of 5.
2.
Zoe, Tom?
Well, I liked it a little better in that, you're right, it's not a thriller by any means. It's a mystery, probably is the best description of it. I actually thought the pacing was refreshing because I'm getting a little tired of all the shaky cam, fast editing, boom, 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 spy movies. They're fine, but I like it that this is a little bit more old-fashioned. And I like that it gives you time to try to catch up, too. It's not just throwing stuff at you constantly. Of course, we had the benefit of being given award season screeners for it, so I could kind of go back and like, who was that guy again? Yeah, unfortunately, you have to wait till the DVD comes out to do that. But yeah, by the end, it almost doesn't matter. It's really more about the atmosphere, about kind of bringing you inside this very gray, paranoid tired, exhausted world that these guys live in. And the cast is terrific. Oldman, John Hurt, Colin Firth, Toby Jones. It really is kind of inscrutable, and I think it does fall apart in actually keeping you up with it. I think that the miniseries length would definitely be a better choice because I obviously had to cut out so much that it just leaves you confused. But I liked it better than Eric did. I think I'd give it a 3.
I'm going to raise the 3 a little bit higher. Oh, you used the word inscrutable. Oh. And in fact, rather than that being an automatic criticism, I think that that's sort of getting at, in fact, what the film is all about. George Smiley, the character that Jean Le Carré creates in his novel, in fact, is the anti-James Bond. If James Bond is all out front, George Smiley is all pulled in. And, in fact, he creates an inscrutable kind of character in George Smiley. Like probably a really successful spy would be, where you never can tell what they are thinking and they blend in and out of the fog. And so I think that the cinematography in the film, in fact, tries to create that world of espionage. So instead of a thriller, I think a lot is what you go in with your expectations. I would suggest in some ways it's as much of a procedural even as a mystery. So I think if one approaches it with the right expectations, you'll be much more pleased. The cinematography is cool and mysterious and emotionally restrained. The acting is. And thank goodness, I think, for Gary Oldman, who can so oftentimes be kind of over the top as an actor, that this is his best performance as far as bringing it all in. So to me, though I will agree with my colleagues here that finally the parts don't add up, in fact, to quite a satisfying sum. And it is, as I think you've noted, particularly Loey, this is a very dense, multi-layered narrative. And one of the reasons that really fine novels oftentimes don't make terrific movies is that everything has to be periscoped down. And a novel, in fact, with multiple characters and as complex as this story is, really takes time to get to know who each of these characters are and to care about them. So here, I think when everything gets down into an hour and a half, 2 hour movie, you just get plot without the time to develop sort of a sense of these people. So you lose track. There's where I think the BBC miniseries oftentimes the British are the best at taking the novel and creating a long form narrative, and it works better. But for the acting, I think it's got a wonderful musical score. Acting is terrific. I think it's got a great look. So I'm going to give it 3.5 stars for what it does right, just recognizing it is flawed.
Yeah, as a technical achievement, I think this is a really great-looking, great-sounding, great costumes, great art direction, great acting to a point. I think Colin Firth is almost asleep in this movie, which I get it, right? We're supposed to say these guys are restrained and they're buttoned up.
I thought Firth was livelier than any of them.
Really?
Yeah, because he's kind of the cad in the office, and he likes to flirt with the women around and just be sort of dashing, at least as a image.
Dashing is not a word that I would use.
Well, no, he's trying to be.
Okay.
I think it's one of those things where he almost is a little bit of a wannabe James Bond kind of character because he likes to be very smooth with the ladies and be in control of everything. And, you know, it doesn't quite work because he's just – that's not the world he's really living in.
Sure. But I want to be clear, though. I'm not against slow movies at all. I love slow movies, and I love movies that unfold, you know, with a lot of detail and things. I absolutely agree with Tom about there being very little characterization in this movie, and that's a really big problem. We know that George Smiley had his marriage fell apart, and there are scenes about that. We get a little bit from him, but from some of the other characters, they're just blank slates, and so I don't know. Praising the acting even seems a little strange in this movie. I know that it was supposed to be the way it is, and I know that everything was very deliberate and slow paced on purpose. But man, it's all plot. I think you have to have a thriller You know what I mean? When you're not putting enough character in there and you're hanging everything on the plot has to work, and it doesn't. So that's why I have to come down harder on this movie. Yeah,
that's a good point.
Yeah.
So it sounds like an average of 3 stars for Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to The Walt Bodine Show on KCUR. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross, filling in for Russ Simmons. And today, I'm talking with our movie critics. Next movie we're going to talk about is The Devil Inside. Tom, what'd you think?
Well, friends, this is a horror film that opened a couple of weeks ago. And in its first 2 days, it made $35.5 million. So no one is going to care what I think about this film. But if you want to know what I think,
our
it is laughably
do.
Bad. So it ends up being the kind of film that's a lot more fun to review than to watch. You take the plot of numerous exorcist-inspired subgenre of movies that are all about exorcisms, and then you give it the cheap found footage, fake documentary treatment from Blair Witch Project and more recently the whole Paranormal franchise, and you come up with The Devil Inside. If pressed, I could even come up with some good things to say about the Paranormal franchise. But the real problem here is that while The Exorcist was a good movie, Blair Witch, I think, an interesting, innovative movie, The Devil Inside isn't good or interesting. It's just silly and stupid. With cardboard acting, very few scares, and an ending that makes no sense whatsoever. One of the interesting things that you can read about, sort of because it's been in the press, is how angry audiences have been that
they've
at the
booed,
end they've been
right?
booing yeah. and cussing.
That's an F cinema score grade.
Right, yes. Yeah. There is something, though, that is kind of fun. Because I did find myself giggling much of the way through the movie. To give it this faux documentary sense of seriousness, at the very beginning of the film comes up the disclaimer that the Vatican does not endorse this movie.
It's not
sure
because they didn't ask.
Yes.
That's right. I confess I don't always see eye to eye with the Holy See. But on the point of The Devil Inside, neither His Eminence or I endorse this movie. So I'm going to give it 1 star.
1 star. 1 star for what, Tom?
Camp value, basically?
For camp value.
Yeah.
And plus, come on, a film that makes $35.5 million, somebody's going to – some people are liking it.
And then everybody turns around and hates it. I want to see the second week drop off on that
thing. I actually know what it was.
What was it?
80%.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, here's the thing that I find interesting. I haven't seen the movie, but the scuttlebutt online is that the movie ends and sends you to a website – to find out how the movie ends.
Yes.
Is that right?
Oh,
that is correct.
And Paramount, the studio that distributed this movie that cost $1 million. That's how much money they made on opening weekend. This movie cost $1 million.
America, didn't
yeah,
they
supported the decision or maybe even encouraged the filmmakers because they wanted the web traffic.
Oh, my God. So basically they tricked people into shelling over. They made like 30 times the budget, and now nobody wants to
see it. They made a really long trailer for a website.
Oh,
and now
God.
You know why the audiences were booing, in fact, at the end of the movie and cussing.
So did you go to the website?
God.
No, I did not go to the
Please
website,
no,
so
yeah.
I do not know how the movie ended.
Occupy Hollywood people.
So has that ever been done before?
Not as far as I know.
And it may never be done again.
So one
they
star.
Made more than enough money, so I suspect they're quite content.
Yeah, people are onto them now, though.
That's 1 star for The Devil Inside. Next movie up is Carnage. It's Loey.
Yeah, Carnage is the latest film from Roman Polanski. It's based on a play by Yasmina Reza. And there's really no effort made to open it up, as they say. It takes place almost entirely in the apartment and hallway outside the apartment of a couple played by Jodie Foster and John C. Reilly.
That's a play that just recently showed here in Kansas City, I think, at the
it's
Unicorn.
It's God of
the
Carnage.
God of Carnage.
The, yeah, yeah. And their son has been in a fight with another couple's son and been injured. And they invite the other couple, played by Kate Winslet and Christoph Waltz, to come over and discuss the issue in a civilized manner. It starts out fairly civilized. But they're sort of trapped. And I think the idea is that the audience feels trapped too, because they just can't seem to get out of this place and out of this situation. And all these little nerves keep getting hit. And all these little threads keep getting pulled on their relationships and their attitudes and how they feel about their children and their families. And, you know, Christoph Waltz's character cracks me up because his phone just will not stop ringing. He's a lawyer, and there's this big case going on. And it's like mid-sentence, about every 3 to 4 minutes, the phone rings. And it's quite funny, actually. And everybody's just on edge. And then the alcohol comes out. And this is also after somebody has hurled all over the living room. So it just gets worse and worse and worse. And basically it's about how even people who consider themselves so, you know, superior and so civilized, underneath the surface there's still a lot of anger and there's potential for violence and resentment. It's, you know, these are the kind of themes Polanski loves. You know, he loves the I guess his whole life has been the dark side of humanity one way or another, and his films explore that extremely effectively. It's a very stylized, the dialogue, particularly as you go into the movie further, it's very stylized, and the performances get a little over the top, especially in Jodie Foster's case. I think there's some miscalculations there as far as the overall effect of the story arc, because it just kind of bursts out at you all of a sudden at some points and doesn't necessarily make sense. But it's very funny in that kind of dark, cynical way. And for the most part, the performances are excellent. So I would give it 3.5.
I enjoyed this a whole lot. I think it's got some flaws, and the flaws are actually with the script more than anything else. And that is that the characters come across to me less archetypes than stereotypes in some ways. There's the Wall Street jerk and the helicopter mom and the liberal lefty, and then her husband, who's ultimately revealed to be something of a blue-collar jerk. Oh. And there's, in fact, I think, somewhat of a stereotypical view that women are neurotic and men are jerks. Oh. But given, in fact, that it's not quite as sophisticated, I think, a critique of bourgeois society as it thinks it is, what I found effective is the way in which Polanski locks us in this room with these folks in real time for about 85 minutes as their ever so polite civil demeanor descends into your feeling like that you're in the midst of Sartre's No Exit, in which hell are other people. In lesser hands than Polanski's, I think this would seem very sort of like a filmed play. However, Polanski has always been one of our real masters of cinematic space, particularly confined spaces. Remember how Rosemary's Baby takes place by and large in just the limited apartment of the Dakotas, but his camera movements and framing is constantly sort of in movement. So I really appreciated that. It's, I suppose, considered a comedy drama. But it's one which in this particular moment, I think, in American political history, in which there is a descent of civil discourse into something akin to kind of an insanity, it's a timely movie. As a comedy drama, I wasn't sure if this is a really tragic drama that made me laugh or simply an amazingly dark comedy. But I think we could say that of the plays of Samuel Beckett or Edward Albee or even David Mamet. It's not up to that quality or level. I'm not making that statement. But still, I like this movie. I found it really funny, so I'm going to give it 3 stars.
I agree with almost everything you said. I liked it more than that. I think even maybe a little more than Loewy, so I'll give it 4. But for me, the fact that it's a play is pretty obvious right from the beginning. It's very claustrophobic. The excuses that they use to get these characters back into the apartment are pretty ridiculous. And so for that reason, I just approached it as a straight-up satire. You know, I wasn't really looking for, 100% believable characters. And maybe the stereotypes kind of made more sense in that realm for me. And some of the acting is pretty over the top. I think Jodie Foster in particular gets a little bit screechy. But I think that's kind of what they were going for. And after a while, when there is a change in her husband, played by John C. Reilly, you can see that relationship more clearly when you realize what he's really like and that he's been putting on airs the entire time. And that's the great thing about this movie is these four characters are constantly trying to impress each other. Mm-hmm. And this entire argument that they're having is over their kids. Right, these children who fight and you know, let's at least be heard so that our boy can have justice because he got hit by your boy. But really, I mean, the adults are the children here. That's what the whole movie is saying, and that certainly comes across. And I laughed a lot in this film. And once you just kind of accept the fact that it's never going to leave the apartment and you are trapped, I love what you said. I enjoyed being trapped with these characters, and the fact that it does take place in real time and it's a short movie, I think just adds to that. So I really like this film. It's really funny.
So that's an average of 3.5 for Carnage, which opened on January 13th. The next movie we have is Joyful Noise, Tom.
Yes, this is, of all things, a Hollywood musical directed by Todd Graff, who made one of my guilty pleasure movies called Camp that I suspect I'm one of the few people that have ever seen, but I actually love that
film. I liked it. Yeah, I saw it,
Now, if I want to sort of prove to everyone that I am indeed a sophisticated film critic and university film professor, I would say that Joyful Noise is nothing more than a two-hour episode of Glee drunk on moonshine. Because, in fact, that is the truth. But it's also true that I don't tell anyone. Had a really good time watching it.
It's just between us.
Yes. I actually laughed. I wiped away a few tears, and I found my foot tapping during all the rollicking musical numbers. So I think what that means is that it has both the shortcomings and the pleasures of old knockoff mindless backyard musicals. Hey, let's put on a show that were made in the 1930s and 1940s and 1950s. I had to kind of laugh because I am a geek. I confess to that, too. And it follows the pattern, just which is right off of the drawing board of Glee, where a high school show choir is trying to make it through regionals to nationals. But here, it's a small-town Georgia church choir. What's kind of silly is that for a small-town Georgia Baptist-style old-time religion church choir, this choir, and none of the other church choirs in the film either, seem to ever sing anything remotely religious, but rather stick to Glee-like pop standards by the likes of Michael Jackson and Sly and the Family Stone. So this is a very secular version of old-time religion, and it's certainly more Glee than Billy Graham. but that was fine with me. Queen Latifah and Dolly Parton are having a great time and are both, it seems to me, in super fine voice. And they play – oh, I didn't even tell you what the story was about, as if you care. In fact, it's a church choir, and the leader, who is played by, for a moment, Kris Kristofferson, but he's dead before the credits come up, has died, and so the leadership of the choir goes to Queen Latifah. But Dolly Parton is the richest woman in town, and so it just sets up their conflict over who's going to, in fact, be the boss of the choir that is going to regionals of a church choir contest. One of the best things in the movie, though, is that they've got – there's two youngsters who serve as the love interest, Dolly's grandson and Queen Latifah's daughter. And the girl is played by Kiki Palmer, and the boy is played by a new young man, Jeremy Jordan. And for those of you that are interested in Broadway stuff, Jeremy Jordan is the new lead of Newsies, which is getting so much buzz it'll be opening soon on Broadway. I think they are both just cute as a button, talented performers, great singers. So they added a lot to the film. Mostly, Joyful Noise is a sappy story full of silly love songs. But as Sir Paul McCartney would sing, what's wrong with that, I'd like to know. So I'm probably going to give this more stars than any critic in America by just wearing my heart on my sleeve and going for 3 stars.
Wow, 3 stars for Joyful Noise from Tom Poe. We're sharing it here and only here.
Yes, and it is a secret. Don't tell anyone I love this movie.
I think we're just about time for a break now. You're listening to The Walt Bodine Show on KCUR. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross, filling in for Russ Simmons. And today I'm talking with our movie critics. We'll be back with more reviews of recent releases in a bit. This is The Walt Bodine Show. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross, filling in today for Russ Simmons. Today we're reviewing films released in Kansas City over the past 3 weeks. Getting the top reviews so far are the films Carnage, and I think a tie for Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy and Joyful Noise. We're joined today by our regular movie critics, Loie Lockerbie from the Kansas City Star, Eric Moline of Lawrence.com and SteenSealers.com.
Scenestealers.com.
Yeah. Sorry.
That's okay.
And Tom Poe, who teaches film at UMKC. We still have a lot more films to cover, and we want to hear from you. Kansas City, what movies have you seen lately that left an impression, good or bad? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. Or shoot us an email at waltbodineshow@kcur.org. But first, Tom, I think you have an announcement.
I do have an announcement. Oh, for several years now, the Second Lending Institute of Greater Kansas City and Topeka, Kansas, have teamed with UMKC and the Kansas City Plaza Library to present a series of films, which are the psychoanalytic film series, where they take a group of films. And what is interesting is that they're all introduced by, in fact, one film authority and one psychoanalyst. And then following the film, the two, in fact, analyze the movie and open it up to a discussion with everyone who attends. And they've been highly successful. Lots of people show up. So that is going on. And on the next one is going to be January 29th, which is Sunday, January 29th, at the Plaza Library, beginning at 1:30 p.m., and this year's series is something that has not been done in the past. They've usually picked a theme and then just showed several different films which deal with that theme. This time they decided to take a director and, in fact, center in on their body of work. And no one is as interested as a contemporary filmmaker, probably in psychoanalytic themes, as Woody Allen.
So oh
this winter, it's a Woody Allen series. And on the 29th, the film is going to be Crimes and Misdemeanors. And, as luck would have it, or fate, on that day, I am going to be the film authority that will be discussing the film, along with Dr. Claude Burnell. So you're invited to come, and we will plunge the unconscious depths of Woody Allen's Crimes and Misdemeanors.
There's a lot to plunge there.
Well, the first movie up that we were going to talk about in this half is The Iron Lady. Eric Moline.
Yeah, The Iron Lady is the obligatory late December, early January release starring Meryl Streep. And this one is a biopic of Margaret Thatcher, who is a very, very thorny subject. And unfortunately, this movie isn't really that interested in her politics. In fact, as one of the more divisive figures in modern political history, you'd think that it would have more to say on that subject. But, you know, this is Meryl Streep is really good in this movie. Every year, everybody talks about what a great actress she is. She has more Oscar nominations than anybody else, and I believe only 2 wins. For Sophie's Choice and what's the first one? I knew I was going to do. Is it Kramer versus Kramer? I think and Sophie's Choice. If I'm wrong, somebody should call in and let us know. But no, she's been nominated more than anybody, and you know, every year when she turns in a performance like this, or the one as Julia Childs and Julie and Julia recently. It's always in service of a kind of a mediocre movie, and that movie, Julie and Julia, was the half that she was in was very strong and compelling, And this is kind of the same way, except it's almost like Margaret Thatcher is divided up into two different stories. We've got these flashbacks of her life, and then you know, starting with her rise into office and everything like that. But then interspersed throughout that is this story of an old woman who is thinking about her dead husband and talking to him. And Jim Broadbent, who is usually excellent, the British actor and everything he's in, plays this doddering old, you know, fool who's always at her side to let her know when she's being too tough on somebody. And it's the same scene over and over again. They replay it like 10 times in the movie with slightly different dialogue. And after a while, it's just a chore to watch this movie. As soon as one of those scenes come back up, it's like I had this great sigh, like, oh boy, I got to sit through this again. Mm-hmm. And there's all these other things that they could be talking about, I thought, that were much more interesting. Now, the relationship with her daughter that's happening in this present day period is actually really interesting. And that almost would have made a better movie than having her talking to her dead husband the whole time. But I had a lot of deep problems with this film, and I think Meryl Streep is great. It'll be interesting to see if come Oscar time she wins Best Actress this year. I think Viola Davis for The Help is currently the favorite. Streep could upset. I mean, she does more than an impression here. She gets, you know, really down into what makes Margaret Thatcher tick. I just think that a lot of the stuff surrounding her was really a chore to get through. So for me, this movie's I'm even going to go one star. I really did not like this movie at all.
One star. What about you, Tom?
Well, in extolling both the virtues and acknowledging the limitations of the Iron Lady, I can give a two-word review. Oh, Meryl Streep. Oh, but I will say a few more words. Oh, she does certainly reincarnate the British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher in a character study of strength and arrogance, the type of historical figure that Shakespeare would have had a heyday with in a historical drama like Henry IV. But here, in fact, rather than Shakespeare, what we're given is something that's more like a History Channel TV biopic told in the tried and true and to the point of trite series of flashbacks and montages. It may well be that the filmmakers are choosing to do that to set out to give a balanced view of a controversial figure like Clint Eastwood, I think, sort of tries to do with J. Edgar. But like J. Edgar's film, this biopic, too, ends up feeling to me more like it just doesn't take any point of view at all. It just sort of like, we'll present the facts and let the audience decide for themselves what they think of the character. But to me, you know what? I think that's kind of a coward's way out and something of a cop-out. I'm not all that much of a big fan of Oliver Stone's approach to historical biopics. But he's not a coward, and the film is going to be interesting. But like with Eric, I think the real problem here is beyond saying this is a great performance by Meryl Streep, and then you can always say another great performance by Meryl Streep. There's just not much there that is very compelling. So I don't know. I'm going to go higher than Eric and give it maybe 2.5 stars because it is another great performance by Meryl Streep. Though, can I also just add one more thing because I've been aggravated a bit this season. I had the feeling about this as I did about all the praise for my week with Marilyn.
I knew you were going to go there.
Yeah, which is this just terrific, great performance. But it just seems like so many people, particularly in Hollywood, just go gaga over someone channeling some well-known figure as if that's enough. But I think when you walk out and all you're talking about is the performance, in fact, that's not what you're supposed to leave a film talking about. It's just what a great performance it is. You're supposed to say, that was a really good movie.
Yeah.
Well, but, you know, if you're talking about acting awards and things like that, then the performances are the point. And again, yeah, Meryl Streep, fantastic. And I can't believe I was a little bit unsure going in. I should have known better. you know, I don't really need the movie to have like a political point of view because I can figure that out for myself. But I'm more interested in, you know, her career and the inner workings of British politics and how she played into that and how it all played out, how her own hubris, you know, was her downfall and so on. And it touches on those things. But then you cut back to the doddering old lady who can't remember she's a widow. And it felt very much the same way I did with J. Edgar. It's like, this is a fascinating character who had a fascinating life and career. Why not tell us about that?
We should also say that the actress playing her when she's younger is not Meryl Streep. So she would only be in the movie if they cut out all the flashbacks, she'd be in half of the film.
Yeah. But, you know, it's just I wanted to get a better handle on the good and bad of what these people accomplished. And I don't care about their personal lives. I don't need to see the old lady puttering around the house any more than I need to see J. Edgar rolling around on the floor with the guy from Social Network. You know, it's pointless. And I was disappointed that, you know, we could have had something really interesting here and we didn't get it, except for Meryl Streep. So I'm with Tom on the 2.5 for her performance, but that's all I can do.
So that was 2.5. I think we have an average here of 2, maybe being a little generous. Well, no, a 2 for the Iron Lady with Meryl Streep. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to The Walt Bodine Show on KCUR. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross, filling in today for Russ Simmons. And today, I'm talking with our movie critics. And we're taking your calls. What new releases would you like to recommend to our listeners or help save them from the disappointment? We want to hear from your first impressions of our new year for films. The number is 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. Or shoot us an email at waltbodineshow@kcur.org. We're also taking comments on Facebook. We did get, I believe, an email from Anne in Westport who asked, what did the movie critics think of Red Tails? She's heard so much NPR coverage. She feels obligated to see that this weekend, although I believe it's not open here in Kansas City this weekend.
No, it is.
Oh,
yeah.
It is.
Today.
Okay.
Yep. No, Red Tails is a classic case of Hollywood withholding screenings from movie critics. And basically, up until a week ago, what I had been reading in the trade magazines is that there had been none at all. And then early this week, we got the announcement that we would be that they would be screening it for us last night. And that's not enough for people to make print deadlines, obviously, because they would have already gone to print. I didn't get a chance to go to the screening last night, and the rest of us didn't either. But I don't know. I mean, there's this whole policy of Hollywood to take the movies that they're scared of getting bad reviews on and withhold them from critics. Underworld Awakening is opening today as well, and we did not get a chance to screen that either. The press I've read on Red Tails is really interesting because if you believe everything George Lucas is saying, it's him bucking the system again with another kind of naive, patriotic, rah-rah story that falls in the same myth category as every Star Wars movie he's ever made. So I don't see how it's such a big deal just because it's about the Tuskegee Airmen and they're black. He's trying to make it a racial thing and say that – you know, that Hollywood didn't want to make this movie. And I'm making a movie for kids, you know, that are black. And I think it's an interesting, strange thing to promote. You know what I mean? Because I have a feeling that when this movie comes out, it's not going to be rebellious in any other way. So it's I love the fact that he's making it all about how Hollywood is against him. And he
yeah,
says
one of the most successful people in Hollywood.
Well, and he also says he's just going to be doing art movies from here on out.
He's never made an art movie in his life.
Well, his first movie,
THX 1138.
Yeah.
Yeah, what was that, 40 years ago?
Yeah, and I just don't think he has it in him. I don't think he's capable of it. So it's a really interesting thing that he's saying, but yeah, I would have liked to have seen it. I didn't know about the screening until the last minute and I couldn't go. So
well, just as a side note, we're going to be having an interview with a local Tuskegee Airman this weekend on KC Currents.
That sounds like a great, better than the movie.
We have a call here from Nathan in Leawood. Hi, Nathan.
Hi. I wanted to point out to you that when you were talking about The Devil Inside and how the movie ends with a question that you go to the website and see how the movie actually ends, it was pointed out a couple of months ago when 7 Days in Utopia was around that movie, that evangelical Christian golf movie, ended in exactly the same way.
Nice.
Any of you familiar with that movie?
I know of it, yeah. And shame on them, too.
And I'm not the type that would go see The Devil Inside or that golf movie, but I just wanted to throw that in for consideration.
Okay. Thank you. That's interesting.
I'd heard about that. It's just, that's sleazy, really, doing that.
Well, thank you, Nathan, for that correction. And it's interesting to see whether it'll happen again. But another movie that opens on January 20th is Shame, which is rated NC-17. Loie, you want to start out?
Yeah, it's rated NC-17 mostly because Michael Fassbender walks around naked quite a bit, and there are some graphic sex scenes because he plays a man who is a sex addict. And, you know, being played by Michael Fassbender, clearly he has no trouble at all getting women to have sex with him, but it's starting to impact his work. He's starting to have trouble at work. He has no emotional connections to anybody. In fact, he doesn't even understand the concept, I don't think. But then his younger sister shows up, and she's as much of a mess as he is, if not in different ways. And she starts kind of shaking up this little world he's created for himself, and he has to start confronting the fact that he doesn't have any connections with anybody beyond just sexual. And it's funny because it gets a little bit melodramatic, especially towards the end. And it's weird because otherwise it's a very kind of somber, quiet movie. It's directed by a director named Steve McQueen, who, I don't know how hard it is to go through life named after, a dead action star. But
this is the British Steve McQueen.
Yeah. He did a movie with Fassbender called Hunger, which was about Bobby Sands, the Northern Irish hunger striker. And it has kind of the same qualities. It's very quiet. It's got a great central performance. But you just never really get a feeling for who this person is or why they are. They just do this, drastic thing, but you never really understand them. And I think that's a flaw when you're dealing with a difficult character who is in almost every frame of the film. So for the performance, for, the way it's staged and the way it plays out, and Carey Mulligan is great as the sister, too. I'd be willing to give it 3 stars, but I think it just doesn't – I didn't really feel like I understood anything about either of the characters by the end.
Wow. I definitely liked it more than that.
Yeah.
I found it kind of fascinating that there's a lot of sex in this movie and zero of it is sexy.
This is
a guy who – it's like Loie said. It's just a matter of fact. It's like a heroin addiction except it's a sex addiction. And he can't, control what's happening to him. But what he does have control over is how other people – his control over other people not finding out about it. And when she comes into his life, she ruins that. She breaks it wide open. He suddenly has to deal with the fact that people are getting hints of the real person, the person he's been hiding this whole time. He goes through this horrible situation where he just gets worse and worse and worse, and we see the depths. And it's not as much graphic as it is just disturbing. And by the end of it, Loie's right. There is a pretty contrived melodramatic conclusion that was really disappointing at the end of the movie, because up until then I felt like really, really captivated. Carey Mulligan is great as the damaged sister, but she's a character we've seen before. But I liked it better than Loie did. I'll give it 3.5 stars.
And I'm in agreement with Eric. I think that this is a really fascinating film. A couple of decades, maybe more, of film came out by a kind of radical, subversive feminist filmmaker named Lizzie Borden called Working Girls, which was so incredibly sexually graphic. But what she does is makes a very sexually explicit graphic film that, in fact, undercuts any sense of eroticism and makes, in fact, sex something that is mechanical. And in that way, this is as sexually frank of a movie as Bernardo Bertolucci's sort of groundbreaking Last Tango in Paris. But it is totally cold and cold because, as Eric says, it's really not a film about sexuality. It's about addiction and obsession. as a cover-up, in fact, for anxiety. So I think that if Loy is correct, and I think she is, that one of the things which is a bit off-putting is that this character we never really come to understand, but it's because, of course, he never comes to understand himself or what's going on. So, in fact, his inability to feel anything, and his sister's, in fact, being the opposite, which is that she just is all emotional responses, is what is the interplay in the film. Carrie Mulligan, though, sings a very downbeat New York.
Yeah.
That is just a terrific performance.
And they show his face as he watches it, and that's one of the key scenes in the movie.
Yeah, that's his Oscar clip right there, man. That's an incredible scene.
Yeah, it's a great scene, and they're terrific in it. So I'm going to go ahead and give it. How many did you give, Aaron?
3.5.
I'll go 3.5.
Yeah.
3.5. So that brings our average to 3.5 for Shame, which opens tonight. We asked our listeners what films they are enjoying that are out right now. We got Karen on Facebook wrote The Artist Lived Up to the Hype.
Oh,
and
yeah.
On Twitter, Justin writes, I adored The Artist, easily one of my favorite films of the last 12 months. I also got a kick out of 50-50, which is new on DVD. But so The Artist, where I know we've probably talked about it before on this show, but hearing a lot about that.
It's a great time. It really is. Yeah.
And I think it's the current frontrunner for Best Picture.
Which would be just extraordinary,
yes,
really. a silent, almost entirely silent movie by a French filmmaker.
And black and white.
Yeah, and black and white. It's awesome.
And also opening tonight is Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close. Eric, you've seen it.
Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close is an adaptation of the 2005 Jonathan Safran Foer novel where – oh, boy, how do I describe this? it's about a hyper-intelligent, hyperactive young boy who is dealing with the death of his father in the Twin Tower attacks on 9/11. The father is played by Tom Hanks in a very genial role, the kind that he specializes in. And the young boy is played by Thomas Horn, who isn't really an actor. In fact, the producer found him on a kid's Jeopardy show. And thought, wow, this kid's really smart. He might be able to recite these lines in the movie about that are coming from this really smart kid. And for me, one of the biggest problems of the film is that he seems like he's reciting lines. Mm-hmm. And so what I don't want to do is pick on the performance of a 13-year-old non-actor. But one of the reasons that I think this movie is tricky and doesn't quite work is because of his performance. Sandra Bullock plays the mother. And what's interesting is that he has a very antagonistic relationship with her after the death of his father. There's something that he feels horribly guilty about, and we learn about that at the end of the film. And it makes some of the earlier scenes work a little bit better. But the whole film revolves around this scavenger hunt that he goes on because he finds a key in a vase in his father's closet. And maybe it worked better in the book, but in the movie, it just seems like this really contrived way to bring in all this unearned sentimentality. Max von Sydow is an old man, a renter from across the street who goes with him on this journey, and he doesn't speak. So he has yes and no tattooed on his hands. And we learn that that's because of things that he went through, a similar amount of grief following World War II. Those scenes work the best in the movie out of any of them, and I think that's mainly because at least one of them isn't talking. But this movie is all over the place, and it just felt too contrived to really, especially revolving or being wrapped around this subject of 9/11, and New York just. I don't know. The way – I have a lot of problems with this movie. I almost feel like I can't get all of them out, and especially in the time that we have. But I don't know. It's definitely a tearjerker, and I think your ability to accept it will be based on your ability to overlook some of these hurdles. And for me, by the time the film ended, there was one good revelation that made me feel better about everything that I'd seen. This is so hard talking about it without spoiling it. And another one that was absolutely an example of the contrived sort of stuff that had happened before it. And so for me, Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close doesn't work ultimately. I'll give it 2 stars. I should mention this is Stephen Daldry, who the director who has done The Hours, The Reader, and Billy Elliot. Every time he puts out a movie, he gets nominated for Best Director. Eric Roth wrote the screenplay. Awards-worthy people all around, but this film just doesn't work.
So really quickly, are we off to a good start here for 2012?
Some of the holdover stuff from 2011, which January is always full of that, that's usually the more interesting ones. But otherwise, this is a dumping ground period, so look out.
I would just like to mention, though, in the midst of the dumping ground, the French film La Havre has opened in Kansas City, and it may be the best film showing.
Well, our guests today have been Tom Poe, professor of film at UMKC, Loie Lockerbie with the Kansas City Star, and Eric Moline, Lawrence.com, and ScenesDealers.com. Thank you all so much for being here today.
Thanks.
To find our archives and subscribe to the Walt Bodine Show podcast, visit kcur.org. On Monday, tune in to Central Standard for some financial advice for managing your holiday debts. Our show is produced by Andrea Salenzi. Our announcer is Kim Noble. And thanks to the movie critics. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross, filling in for Russ Simmons, and this is The Walt Bodine Show. Enjoy your day.